One.
Welcome everybody to the Chinchilla Picking Podcast. It is April 14th, 2024, and it is 4:34 p.m. As always, we hope to be entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. My name is David Underwood, and I am joined by the one and only Brandon Beaver. Brandon, how are you?
We made
Sorry,
it
I'm
through.
wrestling my cat right now. If you can't tell, she's trying to take over the show, and it's like making me laugh. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, we made it through the solar eclipse.
We did make it through the solar eclipse. That was fun. I was excited. I actually went.
17, 17, 17 states pre-declared a state of emergency.
Really? A state of emergency?
17.
Not a state of emergency. They just needed extra troops to handle the traffic and the viewership.
Oh, it was a state of emergency. They declared it beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they, like I said, they needed the extra troops there, the National Guard, to assist with traffic flows.
And then I want to piggyback off of what I said last week,
Okay.
because of idiots. Just saying.
There's always going to be things that happen as a community, as a group. Anytime you get a group of people in one place together, you're always going to have things that we do because of the weakest link
Idiots.
in the chain. The weakest
Okay.
link in the chain is
Yeah.
how I put
You
it.
know what? It was a cool experience. It was the next time we're gonna experience full totality, excuse me,
Yeah, you going to Spain next year or something?
in this region. No, the next time this region is gonna be I think 2099.
Oh, well, I mean, you could, there's solar eclipse all the time. You could just go to a different country though and get totality if you
Not
wanted to.
full totality. That's
Yeah.
different.
No, full totality.
Partial totalities
I
are everywhere.
had to, so I had to have this argument, Brandon. Don't let's we're a stock and investment show. We're not a solar eclipse show, but I had the same argument with other people. That like I'm like, guys, the United States is not the only country in the world that gets full totality and it's only seen
No,
here every 75 years or
we're
something.
not. We're
I'm
not.
like,
What is that?
guys, that's not how science is. So
Okay, so get on Bing, use the Copilot, and then tell me when the next full totality is going to be here, and then when it's going to be
well,
global.
here in the United States, yes.
Yeah, but like
Okay, yeah.
globally, it doesn't happen that often either. There's eclipses quite a bit, but the
It
full
re
totality is different. And I'm not
We're
saying that we only
defined not that often.
not saying that we only see
Defined not that often.
not saying we only see it here. It happens all over the world. That's true, but it's not that often for full totality.
Defined not that often.
I mean, I don't know off the top of my head. I was just looking it up.
Exactly. And that's the same argument. That's the same place other people got. Anyways, moving on. Stocks and investments. I don't know if you guys are aware, that's what this show's meant to be about. But we're gonna move forward with that because there's a lot of news and a lot of, if you can hear my cat, that's her being a pain in my butt right now. But there's a lot of news that happened recently. Unfortunate news. I did talk about it last week. I covered a lot of things that were happening. We're gonna get into some of that today. All right. So let's go over the rules. Rules. Brandon and I get together 5 to 10 minutes before the show and we tell each other what we're going to talk about. You hear the lie back and forth, the bicker and the banter right here on the show live for you. We save that for you. All right. So Brandon, let's get into let's have some levity first before we get into the deep conversation
Yeah,
here.
I want to give you a little bit of levity here. So, Delta Airlines anticipating the full total eclipse here in the United States. And by the way, you're kind of right. The next one's 2026 in New Zealand. They booked, what they did is they chartered a flight, right? They started booking a flight that would follow the eclipse from the East Coast to the West Coast. And enough people signed up for this flight that they filled it up pretty quickly, and they decided to do a second one. So two airplanes going from East Coast to the West Coast following the total eclipse here in the United States, right? And once people got on the airplane, they realized this thing's got a roof on it, and not all of us have a window seat. Like, this is a pretty terrible idea. And so what the passengers were saying is that anytime they'd catch even a tiny slither of a glimpse of this thing, they would run from one side of the airplane to the other side of the airplane to try to see it. Everybody trying to push and see through these windows. So as it turns out, an airplane, not the best place to view an eclipse.
Right. They could have just upcharged everybody and not filled in the middle seats.
Well, one of the passengers said that, yeah, once we got into the in the airplane, we realized we all made a really bad decision.
Right. Yes. All right. So it's a portion of our show that I'm trying to incorporate every single week. Before we get into the, we have a lot of stock and investment news. A lot of things have happened. Great. It's going to be a great topic today. We're going to get into, we're going to talk about how to make some money, how to invest properly based off a lot of these things that are going on and what happened and what can we see hindsight 2020, right? But before we get into that meat of the show here, some stock twits. I got some things from stock twits. Are you ready, Brandon?
I'm ready.
All right. So this one was found on the Ripple stock twit thread, and it said, "I don't know, it's kind of harsh. I might get some feedback for this one, but it said once all of these $20 an hour fast food workers get their first check, boom, crypto run." I thought that was funny. Another person on the Shiba Inu stock tweet said, "All paper hands, please sell so I can load up cheaper for the long haul." Well, I like that because it's so true of a lot of stocks. But if you don't know what paper hands are, that's people who sell at the first little ints of a drop, or as soon as they get like just a little bit up on positive. Diamond hands are people who buy and hold forever. So that's the difference there. That one, that anyways, one more here. This was on GameStop. You'll love this one. That was on the GameStop stock twits, and it said, "Oh, look, more red. Love seeing red day after day, year after year. Keep up the great work, RC and team."
Why do you still hold it?
I knew you'd have a nice reaction to that.
There's one thing. Okay, so Diamond Hands gives you an advantage over the paper hands, but only if you're making the right decisions. If you're buying and holding GameStop, your Diamond Hands there's no advantage there.
They probably bought it 300 and they're trying to DCA.
Oh my goodness.
Anyways, that's just some fun things you can read on stock twits today. If you guys don't have stock twits, go on there and follow Brandon on at Chinchilla Pickin. He's on there. You can find us. You'll see the logo. And I'm sure Brandon will troll some people and start some fights. I'm sure it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, let's get into it. I know the thing on everybody's mind, and it's because I covered this last week. I covered it, and I said, you know, you need to make some purchases now. There are some things. I recommended ExxonMobil, which actually was flat last week. But I recommended getting in some oil. I covered some of the oil issues that were going on. I covered the fact that I briefly covered, like in 30 seconds real quick, on the Iran-Israeli, that there was a threat of something might happen there. Well, it turns out something did happen. Everybody's aware of it now. And I don't want to make light of anything that happens like this ever in the world. But I want to talk about how it reflects on us when we invest. Like, how's this going to affect us? Now, you know, you can make assumptions like, whoa, the market's going to go down on Monday. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe because some of the news is that this got it all out of everybody's system. And as long as Israel doesn't retaliate, it's over with. So if that's the case, then, you know, market may not drop. It may drop a little. Who knows? I know oil should be going higher because of the Middle East and the tensions there. Everybody's expecting oil to jump first thing Monday morning. And oil stocks to go up as well first thing Monday morning because of some of this. But let's dig into some of these articles I have here. I want to talk about one I found on Reuters. This was actually came out this morning at 8:59 a.m. This was surging U.S. energy shares reflect robust growth, inflation worries. So didn't have much to do in the headline, at least, with the Middle East troubles. But it did go in to say one key driver, the price of oil, has risen 20% year to date due to unexpectedly strong U.S. economy and worries over a broadening Middle East conflict. So there's a twofold there. The economy didn't fizzle out like Brandon and other bears were saying. And then the fact that there's a Middle East conflict possible has made an oil to go up 20% this year. So some investors are believing that rising energy shares could hedge against U.S. inflation. Consumer prices have proven more stubborn than expected, threatening to restrain the broader stock rally, but undermining expectations of how much the Federal Reserve will cut rates.
I am, by the way, so impressed by your ability to maintain professionalism with your cat messing with the camera, jumping in your lap. What is happening right now?
I don't know, man. She's throwing a fit here, and I'm just trying to move forward. She's probably going to be all over this podcast, which is fine, but like, it's. I'm just trying to move forward here. Let's talk about some of the biggest ones this year. Marathon Petroleum's at 40%. Valero Energy's up 33% year-to-date. We're only in April, so that's a very strong year-to-date number. But we got some first-quarter earnings coming in. Exxon's already said it's going to be a little lower. I covered that last week, but they expect in the rest of the year to be higher for them, right?
Yeah.
So we are seeing some of that. And then some people are saying that U.S. retail sales is going to come out on Monday. That's going to give us a little bit of how strong the U.S. economy really is. And that will give a real tell as far as oil goes, as far as like if the economy is strong and we have these tensions. Yes, oil will go up in price. That's just how this works, right?
Yeah, well, it seems like the economy is doing okay right now. I mean, Constellation Brands just came out with decent earnings. The numbers don't seem too bad. Inflation was sticky. That's not good, but
inflation is sticky, but a lot of the Fed has really tamed what they said, and they don't expect a rate increase. Some have even come out and said not even this year, right?
Fine.
So we'll
see. The
market
expects it. So we're going to have a correction probably based on that, but
yes.
Yeah.
So the concern for oil prices, if you're just strictly looking at prices, you take emotion and lives out of it. Oil prices will take a hit if the Middle East tensions ease or if the global growth starts to wobble, potentially clouding the outlook for energy shares. So if you have a lower global market, then that's not good for oil companies, right?
Right, right.
Well, also, one other thing I want to go into here is, and this was on CNBC, and it was shared all over StockTwits and shared to lots of places, came out this morning at 7:17 a.m. This headline read, Ukraine's attacks on Russian oil refineries show the growing threat AI drones pose to energy markets, right? So yep. Ukraine has launched drones, and they have hit 18 Russian oil refineries with a combined capacity of 3.9 million barrels per day this year alone, right? So that's a lot of barrels per day this year that's already been affected by this war between Ukraine and Russia. So this is really having an effect between that war and what's in the Middle East. You're really seeing an effect that could push oil prices even higher, above $100 a barrel, and that would cause ExxonMobil and others to go up in price due to that and the strong economy. Brandon, thoughts?
Yeah, so I don't... The cat is... You have a crazy cat. So, yeah, you know what? When it comes to this Iran and Israel situation, I mean, we get about 3,000 barrels a day from Iranian crude. But that, I mean, when you compare that to the 20 million barrels per day that we use overall, it's not so much. But, you know, the question is with the new Iranian and Israeli conflict that's happening right now, what are going to be the side effects of that overall? Is there going to be an escalation with Israel and Lebanon? Is this escalation going to spill over into the other neighboring countries between Israel and Iran, two very strategically placed countries in the Middle East there that could affect transportation from all different areas. It my first reaction to this conflict, when it was announced that Iran was going to attack Israel yesterday, was frustration, and I'm still kind of frustrated by it because, there's a lot of things that could have been prevented in regards to what's happening right now. And I have to say that, I think that market sentiment with the S&P 500 reaching the level of 4,200 was already a little shaky. I would be surprised if this does not trigger a pullback, a correction, the 10% or more. I would be very surprised. I think we're going to have a lot of, in the stock market, there's going to be a lot of volatility over the next couple of weeks. I wonder what the geopolitical atmosphere right now is probably the most volatile I've seen since 9/11, in my lifetime. It may be even more volatile than that. My initial reaction to it right now, and my heart thinks that this is going to be temporary and it'll all be over in a couple of years, but I just don't know. I've got a list of stocks, a watch list like everybody should have, waiting to buy, and my full intention over the next couple of weeks, if we do have this correction 10% or more, is to pull the trigger on a few of them and
So
invest for the long term.
I'm going to interrupt you here. So the thought on a 10% correction on Monday is due to tensions and due to markets globally slowing down and shipments slowing down and things like that. But I don't think it will. So I'm going to look at this if there is a 10% correction as a great buying opportunity to buy what I believe are strong names at a lower cost.
Yeah. So I mean, with Iran and Russia, their allies, is Russia going to get tangled up into this mess, or are they just too bogged down in Ukraine? I don't know.
Well, we're not a political news podcast or any of that, but I did have a spin there in a little bit on this kind of play here, right?
Right.
So I want to first tackle what we think is going to happen Monday, A, and you said that you expect a correction. I expect maybe a correction, maybe not. It all depends on if Israel has come out and said that they are going to go ahead and retaliate or not, right?
Why
So.
wouldn't they though? I mean, 99% of what Iran sent over into Israel, the rockets and the drones, most of it got intercepted. So Iran's retaliation had very little damage effect in Israel. But if another country launches an attack, on you, I think you've got to retaliate. Now, the other hand of
So
this is that.
I want to cut you off here because I
No, no,
completely
no, no, no.
disagree.
Let me finish. Let me finish. Let me finish because I don't want to sound like I'm uneducated on this. I mean, this is kind of Iran's attack on Israel's kind of a retaliation already onto the Iranian embassy that killed some military targets. So go ahead. Now you can go ahead.
All right. So you say that, right? Like, hey, no country should retaliate when they get attacked like this.
No,
You know,
I said they should be able to.
But I mean, but all right, look, I live in the United States. I was raised here. A lot of my family's has served in the military. I come from a Native American side. I don't know if most people are aware of this, but since September 11th, 20% of all Native Americans have served in the military. So there's a huge military presence in my family on that side. One thing I could tell you is that the United States. Its consulates, its embassies, its naval ships, and its country has been attacked time and time and time and time and time and time again. And 99% of the time, we don't do anything. So, yes, countries don't have to respond if, like, it was no life loss type of attack. And the United States has had people killed, and we still didn't respond. So we have done that in the world. Are we probably the only country to do that? Probably one of a handful. So I disagree with that standpoint. They don't have to because they stopped everything they threw at them. They did no damage besides a loss of extra missiles from shooting them down. It's a good chance for peace. So we'll see what happens there. But in regards to the correction, I don't believe if Israel maintains the peace and does not react, then I don't think we'll see a correction at all. But if we do, I'm buying into it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. But I mean, I think that right now, with the way things are, there is the possibility of this escalating. And I think that possibility is raised right now, to greater, aspects than what we would usually expect. With
Yeah.
what's going on right now with Ukraine and Russia, and now Iran and Israel and Hamas. I mean, the good news to this is that most of the Arab countries are wanting nothing to do with it.
Right.
They want nothing to do with it. I mean, you're not going to have a situation where, I mean, Egypt and Israel have actually become allies recently. And over the course of time, the global landscape has actually become safer up until now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be my position too. Let's go ahead and buy into it. Now, Jamie Dimon says this is the most volatile geopolitical landscape since World War II.
Yes and no. It's just that there's a lot of battles already between like Ukraine and Russia and Israel and their takeover of Gaza, and then you have the China and Taiwan. There's a number of different things popping up, but we've had the exact same thing during Desert Storm. They said that was going to be the war to end all wars back in 1991, 92. People were blowing that up. When you've lived long enough, and no discredit to anyone who's 20 in the early 20s right now, and they're saying, oh, this is crazy. But when you've lived long enough, you've seen these things happen time and time and time again. When the British sent their troops down to the Falklands, they said that was going to trigger something, with Argentina and Britain fighting each other in the Falklands. When you had Bosnia Herzegovina in the mid 90s, here, all those things happened there.
Lebanese Civil War in the 80s that involved Israel as well.
So you see where I'm going with this. I'm not saying any of this should just be shrugged off. Yes, it's very serious. Any loss of life is awful in any case, right? But I'm just saying, I think, this is going to be tampered down and it's going to come to an end very soon.
Right.
So, from an investment and stock purpose, I am going to go ahead and if there's a big correction, I'm going to be buying in, which I actually did this weekend, not in stocks, but in crypto. Because as soon as Iran launched into their drones and missiles over the weekend at Israel, Bitcoin went down all the way to $60,000 a Bitcoin, right? It was dropping, and it was dropping because of the war. And now, if anything, Bitcoin should probably be going up because in countries' monetary, like the dollars or the dinar or whatever the shekel is going to be devalued because of war, right? That's usually typically what happens to countries in war. So people need to put their money in something that's actually has nothing related to a country, which you would think Bitcoin would go up. If anything, in the cryptocurrency says something, some way that you could travel from France to Argentina to United States and just continue to use your Bitcoin to pay for everything. That's something that is, unique to the cryptocurrencies. So when all the cryptocurrencies dropped like a rock, if you look at the charts, it looked like a cliff. They went from like 68, 69,000 at Bitcoin down to 61. I went ahead and bought in on a lot that I wasn't holding. And then it quickly, as it was starting to announce that they were shooting down everything that Iran was shooting, it went right back up, not all the way, but it went all the way back up about another 6-7%. So I made a quick 6-7% of my money just because I didn't lose my cool.
Well, I think it's still viewed by a lot of people as a speculative asset. And I mean, the weird thing to me is that when the NASDAQ sells off, Bitcoin often sells off as well. It hasn't, I don't think, in the past like couple of weeks when on the days that NASDAQs take a beating. But that's only because of the Bitcoin halving event that's coming up, I think. But in general, that's what happens. So I wonder what's going to happen to the NASDAQ tomorrow. I don't think it's going to be a very good day. I really don't.
Right. Well, and over the weekend too, the Iranian, hold on, I want to pronounce this correctly. The Iranian currency, it fell to a record low of 705,000 reals to $1 on the unofficial market.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a record low of it after that happened. And that was another thing that happened. So when Russia invaded Ukraine, the Russian ruble over the course of 1 month dropped to a low. And I, of course, at that time, I went ahead and bought in. I bought some rubles. And then when it started going back up again, because they realized this is not going to be the end of the Russian market or economy, it went back up. I made money. There are, unfortunately, I don't like the ways I'm making the money here, you know, based off the actions of irresponsible people, but there are opportunities to create some quick turnarounds on money in times like these. And
Right.
since I'm not in a position to stop any armies, I'm at least going to go ahead and make some investments and some quick trades off these. But you know, I mean, so coming again back, bringing it back home here, I see an opportunity to make money if it goes into correction mode, 10% or more. Buy some safe, secure companies that you know are not going to do bad. So here I have a list here, Brandon.
Okay. You know, my question is what if Monday the market front runs that and these get bought up? I think you're gonna have like your high dividend stocks, your kind of your Coca-Colas and stuff. And go ahead, go with your list because I had some things I wanted to talk about as far as that goes too.
So my list is very specific, right? So my question to you is, what was used by Ukraine to attack the Russian refineries?
It was missiles, right?
I
Was it
just
missiles?
reported it.
It
It
was a
was
gun.
AI drones.
Artificial intelligence. Okay, yeah.
AI drones, right?
Yeah.
What did Iran send the most of to attack Israel?
Drones.
Right? What has Israel been using, you know, in different parts of Gaza?
Drones.
Right. So where would you probably invest in, since if everybody's using up tons and tons and tons of drones, they got to replenish, right?
Right.
So if you do a quick research of the top drone makers in the world, you get this list here I'm going to read off to you. I bet you already know the first three on the list, but our listeners may not know them. So you get this list, and I don't know if it's in any order or not. This is just the order that I found them in. Lockheed Martin. You got Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, BAE Systems, Elbit Systems, Israel Aerospace Industries, Turkish Aerospace Industries, General Atomics and Aeronautical Systems, AeroVironment, and In-Situ.
Okay, so the last few that you said there, I've never heard of before.
Right?
That's
Okay.
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, so everybody's using drones, drones this, drones that, drones everywhere. You got to replenish your drones. So those are companies right now in a world where we're sending 300 drones out at one time. You know, they're going to get orders for another 300, and they're going to make some more money.
Okay.
So you're probably going to see Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, all of them go up on Monday. At least I say 1 to 3% return.
Yeah, and Lockheed is one of my favorite companies, but it's been underperforming for the past year.
Because, I mean, it was so high with all these wars, everybody expected them to do better.
Yeah.
You know, and they just weren't returning like the profit we thought they were going to return, which is, again, you know, you're going to see that emotional 1 to 3% tomorrow, but then is it sustainable? I don't know. Take your trade, take your money, and go, is what I say.
Yeah, so with these government contractors, what's happening right now with them is people want to buy into them. They're staying relatively stable. People want to buy into them because of the geopolitical landscape. But at the same time, when you're looking at inflation and the Federal Reserve raising interest rates, they realize that governments are going to have to pull back on the purse strings, and so there's budgetary constraints there for right now.
Yeah, there are budgetary, definitely 100% budgetary constraints. Yes, I know. So there's one company I follow, and I just recently sold my holdings in them. It went profitable by a little bit. I've held them for a long time. And I was hoping to make way more money. I held them so long for very little profit. But Cooler Technology Group. They after the bell on Friday, they didn't have great. They had an earnings miss again, which is what I was expecting and what I said in our group chat that I'm in with Brandon there. I was expecting them to go ahead and miss on earnings. But then, you know, at times like this, they already signed in contracts of Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and Northrop Grumman to go ahead and do heat shielding for their missiles. So who knows? Maybe Cooler Technology Group might be a good opportunity for me to buy back in after the drop on the earnings.
Maybe.
Right. So there you go. Brandon, that's a whole mouthful of everything I got.
Yeah.
All right. I've never gone first before. Like, how do I transition this nicely? I don't. It's your turn. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. So as Dave was talking, the conflict between Iran and Israel probably going to impact energy markets. We may be seeing a disruption of energy supplies leading to an increase in oil prices. We want to look at a couple of different things here. We want to look at what kind of economic uncertainty this causes, if there's going to be a larger regional war, which we kind of already touched on there, and what kind of power Iran's going to have over the region. Now, I'm looking at Iranian power. I don't really think it's going to increase over the Arab world too much. As I said, the Arab world doesn't seem really want to do much anything with the issue in Gaza that's happening there.
Well, so, I mean, I reported on how the fact that Egypt's having power struggles because whenever Israel goes under attack, they go ahead and halt their natural gas going out to Egypt, and that supplies 30% of Egypt's power grid is from that natural gas. I don't know. I believe they opened it back up to Egypt, but that's why Egypt and Israel are getting along now, because they have an economic interest in each other. Right. Egypt enjoys the natural gas from Israel. Israel provides the natural gas and gets a profit from Egypt. So that's why I believe is one of the main reasons why Egypt has closed its border and saying this is an Israel Gaza problem. We're just going to stay out of it.
Yep.
So, I mean, you have some other things like that in the area that's not reported on enough to talk about the differences between one country and another and their relationship with Israel, if you will.
Right. And we're likely to see more Iranian sanctions. That's probably not going to have much of an effect on the U.S. economy here. As I said, going into this right now, the U.S. economy is still looking particularly strong. Constellation Brands, for example, they had better than expected sales in the latest reported quarter. Net income of $392.4 million, $2.14 a share. Compared to $223 million or $1.21 a share earlier. So quite the growth there. Yeah, most of it was actually driven by beer sales. So beer sales.
Modelo, Corona.
Beer sales growing 11% in the quarter, 9% in fiscal 2024 so far. And they are attributing that to the strength of its brands, which include Modelo, Especial, and Pacifico. Wine and spirit sales did fall 6%, but that didn't seem to harm them too much there. But consumers seeming to be a little bit on track, although I will say during troubled times, beer tends to outperform. So I guess we'll find out what that means in the long term here. The other big thing that I wanted to get to here, and this is going to take most of my time, this is Jamie Dimon's recent letter to shareholders. 26 pages altogether, I think almost 27 full pages, actually. So I do recommend reading it. It's an interesting article. There's a lot that I disagree with in it, but I don't really want to get into that. We've already talked a little bit too much politics here, mostly because I think that what you're going to be reading in the headlines on Monday morning, I mean, this is already dominating the Wall Street Journal, is the geopolitical tensions on the rise. But he was saying, as far as JP Morgan Chase goes, 2023 year, another strong, superior year for them. Generated record revenue for the sixth consecutive year, setting numerous records in each of their lines of businesses. Revenue in 2023, $162.4 billion in revenue. Return on tangible common equity was 21%. on a daily basis, they move $10 trillion in over 120 currencies, more than 160 countries. How insane is that? $10 trillion a day they're moving.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. And then this is why I mistakenly thought Ripple was a great investment because it helps for international transfers of money back and forth. But these companies like JP Morgan are just creating their own cryptocurrencies and doing it
Yeah.
that
So he kind of went into in the very beginning of the letter, started talking a little bit about the risks for the economic landscape in the United States. Quantitative tightening was the first thing he was looking at. Says that it's draining more than $900 billion in liquidity from the system annually. We've never truly experienced the full effect of quantitative tightening on this scale. He said, plus ongoing wars in the Ukraine and the Middle East continue to have potential to disrupt energy and food markets, migration, and military and economic relationships, in addition to their dreadful human costs. These significant and somewhat unprecedented forces cause us to remain cautious, is what he was saying. I think there were seven or eight things here that he's keeping in mind when he's running this company. The focus is first, he says that the work will have a very human impact. He says that JP Morgan is obviously owned by large institutions, pension plans, mutual funds, and directly by single investors. He said more than 100 million people in the United States currently own stocks. Many, in one way or another, own JP Morgan Chase stock. Frequently, these shareholders are veterans, teachers, police officers, firefighters, healthcare workers, retirees, or those saving for a home, education, or retirement. Their employees are often shareholders, as well as their families and their companies. He said their management team does work every day recognizing these enormous responsibilities that they have to all of their shareholders. The second thing that he's looking at here is shareholder value, but only building that if you're maintaining a healthy and vibrant company, which means that you're doing a good job taking care of your customers, employees, and communities. And he said, really, how can you have a healthy company if you neglect any of these stakeholders? He said, as we've learned over the past few years, there are a myriad of ways an institution can demonstrate its compassion for its employees and communities while still strengthening shareholder value. The third thing here is one that popped out to me the most, honestly. He said, third, while we don't run the company worrying about the stock price in the short run, in the long run, we consider our stock price a measure of our progress over time. This is important because I've seen a lot of companies in my time that care about the day-to-day stock price, and they neglect the long term. They neglect their employees. They have high turnover rates because of it. They have terrible company cultures where people are turning on each other, thinking that their jobs are at stake on a constant basis. Very important to keep the long term in mind and really not care to, at all about the day-to-day movements. Because if you're running your company the way that you should, over time, your stock's going to go up anyways. He said also, here's the fourth one. The fourth one is they're united behind basic principles and strategies that help build this company and make it thrive. These allow us to maintain a fortress balance sheet, constantly invest and nurture talent, fully satisfy regulators, continually improve risk, governance, and controls, and serve customers and clients while lifting up the communities worldwide. The fifth thing that he's looking at is striving to build enduring businesses, which they rely on and benefit from one another. And he specifies here they are not a conglomerate. 40 years ago, if you said you were a conglomerate, that made your stock look better, but now it doesn't. Not having the structure of a conglomerate helps you, and this is according to him, generate superior returns. Nonetheless, despite their best efforts, the walls that protect JP Morgan are not particularly high, and we face extraordinary competition. I honestly think that they have a pretty good moat. They've got competition from a very small handful of big banks that are just like them. But this is kind of the language that somebody who's very competitive has. I think they kind of sometimes see the competition as bigger than what it actually is. Maybe they're not recognizing their own achievements as much as they possibly should. But also at the same time, if they say we don't have much competition, especially if you're a bank, then you're going to make yourself targets of unwanted regulation. So he said that he's written about this reality extensively over the past, and he's going to cover it again in this letter, and he did, but I'm not going to go too much more into it. He says they recognize their strengths and vulnerabilities. They play their hand as best as they can. Sixth focus, and this is a new one, he says, they must be a source of strength, particularly in tough times for their clients. And in the countries which they operate, they must take seriously their role as one of the guardians of the world's financial systems. And then the last one here, I'm sorry, the second to last one, they operate with a very important silent partner, the U.S. government, noting, as his friend Warren Buffett points out, that his company's success is predicated upon the extraordinary conditions of our country and what the country creates. He is right to say that to his shareholders that when they see the American flag, that they should all say thank you. I would like to distinguish the U.S. government and the United States as a country. I think they're two separate things, but that's my opinion. Eighth, and finally, we know the foundation, that their success rests with their people, their frontline, both individually and as teams, serving their customers and communities, building technology, making strategic decisions, managing risk, determining our investments, and driving innovation. However you view the world, its complexity, risks, and opportunities, a company's prosperity requires a great team of people with guts, brains, integrity, enormous capabilities, and high strands of professional excellence to ensure its ongoing success. Very important for a CEO to surround himself with very knowledgeable people. And it's also very important for a CEO to not have so much pride to where he does not hire somebody who may be better than him. And those are kind of my points that I'm adding to the end of it here. He went on to talk about artificial intelligence. He says that artificial intelligence will clearly change his business. It's already doing so. Kind of unknown how it's going to affect society at large. But he compared the current artificial intelligence boom to the invention of electricity and to computers. Obviously, he's saying artificial intelligence is going to have a huge effect on the economy. He's investing more in AI capabilities. Many of the projects, he says, will pay for themselves. Over time, they anticipate the use of artificial intelligence has the potential to augment virtually every job in the United States. Any thoughts on that, Dave, before I get into anything else here?
No, that's a great mission statement from Jamie Dimon and JP Morgan. What I will ask and push back, if I wish I was in the room, I was like, Jamie, do you uphold these values when you go on TV and say Bitcoin is awful and you drive the price down and then buy it lower? Do you uphold those values at that time? Do you uphold those values when you make merger deals and conversation with other people? You see, you get my point where I could go with this.
Yeah, so JP,
they're a bank. They're a big bank. He has to release a mission statement like that. I understand if he truly believes that, that's great. That's great, because that's what I would like to hear. Warren Buffett says some similar things, but I believe Warren Buffett when he says it.
So, being a big bank, and I'm just going to say this, and I don't want to be too critical, but being a big bank, one of their jobs is to be a small arm of the federal government. Unfortunately, that's how we run our currency here in the United States. That's how we run our banking system. He's got to toe that line. If the Federal Reserve comes out and says Bitcoin's a scam, then Jamie Dimon's going to do the same thing.
So, yeah, but here's the thing is over the last 20 years, they're up 180% in over 20 years. This is a slow growth. They don't have a great dividend, so I'm not buying. They're a great company. I don't think there's anything wrong with them. It's just it doesn't give me the growth I'm looking for. If I got to wait 22 years to get 180%, I'm not buying you.
So I think JP Morgan's for people who are just looking for stability and predictable growth over the long term.
P&G. There you go.
Procter & Gamble's a great one for that. I mean, they make incredible products. And they
Microsoft.
And Procter & Gamble has good company culture too.
Right. Microsoft. There you go. That's another one.
Regarding the geopolitical issues, he said, we may be entering the most treacherous geopolitical era since World War II. And it is another quote here. When terrible events happen, we tend to overestimate the effect that they will have on the global economy. Recent events, however, may very well be creating risks that could eclipse anything since World War II, and we should not take them lightly.
No, I 100% would not taking them lightly, but I don't know. That's a harsh comparison. You had the Vietnam War, you had the Korean War. Yeah, I mean, I could continue this list here again, but like,
yeah,
it's been all kinds of
the entire Cold War after World War II, entire Cold War.
So I mean, there's all kinds of other ones I would say that I would put higher on that list than this one that just happened, because I believe it's going to cool down here shortly. I mean, Israel is already taking over all of Gaza at this point, just that one city. And so they're almost done, basically.
Yeah, well, hard to predict, though. I mean, we thought that Ukraine and Russia wasn't going to last that long.
That's because we thought Russia was going to just trounce all over them, and it turned out Ukraine can fight. So,
and then we thought Russia was going to back down, and they never did.
Oh, Russia's not going to back down. Putin's not going to back down. That's not in his character.
Yeah, I know.
He doesn't. That's not his character to back down. So he's got to find a way out where he wins, quote unquote.
Yeah,
that's the only way.
You know, I was outside yesterday in a lot of dust and a lot of dirt and crap, and so my voice is really bothering me. So, listeners, if you hear me cough or clear my throat, I'm sorry. I try to mute when I do it, but go ahead.
Yeah, and I always try to focus all these things back here on stocks and investments, Brandon. So you read all that about JP Morgan. I say it's not a buy for me personally. I think it's going to continue going up, but it's just too slow for myself. What do you think?
No, but you know what? If it's a victim of the pullback, I might think of it. You know what I mean? It'll be on my watch list for sure. Jamie Dimon is one of the most intelligent men in the world. And unfortunately, you read this this shareholder letter, it reads a lot like any global head of central intelligence would write. It seems very hawkish, in my opinion. But he is very intelligent, even though I disagree with about half of the letter and what he thinks America's role should be in the world. It's an incredible letter to read. I think it gives you a good take on what's going on in the global economy and the geopolitical risks associated with it. I think that he's very intelligent and very tough for me. If there's a 10% pullback and JP Morgan falls victim to it too, it would be very tough for me to not buy a company led by somebody like him.
I got you. So give you an update. Yeah. And I agree. We're talking about buying dips when things have dipped and, you know, they're not going to stay down. It's just down because of a macroeconomic event.
Right.
Talking about that, I pulled up my crypto.com app here and I opened it up. And I'm looking at some of the cryptos I hold long term, not the ones I traded yesterday, but these are ones that I have positions in long term. So just this gives me the day to day ups and downs, right?
Yep.
So the percentage return today, I'm going to go down the list. I'm going to read off my percentages. I got in the first one off the list, 8.7% up today. Second one, 29.6% up today. Next one, 16.74% up today. Next one, 20.78% up today. And the last one, 17.29% up today. My point I'm making is everything dropped yesterday, and that was the time to buy if you were in cryptocurrency. Come Monday, that's what we have to see. You have to watch the news, watch the headlines, see what they're saying about what Israel's going to do. And then that's if everything drops, that's when you find good ones to buy and you make a quick trade.
Right. And buying those dips, that's what makes your returns that much better. So you mentioned JP Morgan Chase's return over what? Was that 5 years you were looking at?
That was 22 years. And that's why I'm saying I wasn't going to buy it.
Okay. So if you bought it on a dip 12 months ago and it was on a dip about 12 months ago, then you would be, 41.87% up high over the past 12 months. So buying the dips, your return's going to be better than that. As you know, rather than buying, you know, the top of the market, or you know, not being selective as to what your price should be.
Gotcha. What else you got, Brandon? What else you got?
Let me see if I don't think
it's been hot and heavy today. So I think we're good for final thought. Final thought. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know what? My final thought here is I'll be honest with you. I'm not a wizard. I don't know what's going to happen. My thought is that this should trigger a pullback. I think that the S&P 500 was already overbought. I think that the NASDAQ was already overbought. I think sentiment was starting to weigh in the opposite direction and starting to go a little bit negative already as the market reached new highs. I would be very, very surprised if the dip buyers came in full force before 10% pullback of the S&P 500. And I'd be very, very surprised if we did not have at least a couple of weeks of pretty big volatility here.
Maybe a couple of weeks, maybe not. I'd look in the other way on that. It all depends on what Israel and Iran do. That's
the big but it's key not to. Just it's not just Israel and Iran. So now we got what's the Fed going to do, right? So we're looking at what the Fed's going to do. Are they going to cut rates? Are they not? I think the market was expecting 3 rate cuts. Now that's in question if we're even going to do one.
I disagree with that, and I have my evidence to show that.
But the Atlanta Fed official came out and said there's probably not going to be any rate cuts. That was on Wednesday or Thursday, I forget, and that's when the market had a pullback.
Yeah, so I think the pullbacks this week were a combination of the geopolitical tensions, and yes, some have to do with the rate cuts, but I believe we've baked in on these pullbacks after the CPI report came out. That's when the pullbacks really started. And that's when we knew that we're not going to get the rate cuts. The CPI report came in hot.
Yeah. I would recommend, if there is a correction, though, 10%, play it as a case-by-case basis. My normal reaction would be to go into consumer products and goods, looking at stocks like Procter & Gamble, like you said there. But with inflation sticking as high as it is, that's kind of hurting Procter & Gamble as well as Pepsi, for example. So you may not want to look at those. You may want to go into other, you know, maybe even utilities. I don't know if there's a strict pullback, but I would, if there's a huge pullback on the NASDAQ, I'd be looking at Netflix.
You know, you look at companies. I remember a couple of years back, you said this, you got to look for companies that have a big profit margin that they can eat into their profit margin a little bit.
Right.
Or that way they prices. Can make. Yeah, that way they can maintain good prices to continue to have the customers come there, because everybody else is going to have to raise their prices. So you look for companies like that. So if you're truly looking in that regard, you're going to look at a good increase for Walmart. You're going to look at an increase for Costco. Those are the ones that are should be moving higher in times of everything going down. But I'm not going to buy either one. But, you know, if you're forcing me to make a call.
On a recession, or not a recession, but on a correction, if Costco comes down to a fair value price, I would definitely buy Costco. That would be on my top 5 list.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Cool. For me, my final thought, you got retail sales numbers coming out tomorrow. Definitely going to be looking at that in conjunction with the headline news of what's going on. I'm going to be using those things together, the macroeconomic news of the geopolitical events and the microeconomic news of the retail sales numbers, combine them and come up with some plays, hopefully to make some quick trades this week. Because if retail sales numbers show an increase year over year across the board in all the different areas, that's going to be the consumer still strong. Consumer strong, and if geopolitical events are high, oil is definitely going up. That's one thing to take a look at this week. And just for no reason at all, but just to have fun with Brandon, GameStop reports earnings this week. So there you go. All right. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. As always, we hope we have been entertaining, educational, and uplifting, because we want everyone to make money.
Have a good night.
Have a good night.